Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants. Price may vary.
Remember the Thai cave rescue? What about the mission depicted in Black Hawk Down or the epic rescue shown in Captain Phillips? You've probably heard of all of these, but did you know that U.S. Air Force Special Warfare played a pivotal role in all of them? These airmen are the most highly trained warriors on the planet. Other forces like the SEALs and Army Rangers call on them to provide skills no one else can. Not many people make the cut, but if you think you can, visit airforce.com to learn more.
This is the Busted Open Podcast. You can listen to the full show Monday through Saturday from 9 a.m. to noon Eastern on SiriusXM Fight Nation Channel 156.
Welcome to the Busted Open Podcast. This is Dave LaGreca. On today's episode, myself and Thunder Rosa talk more about the career and life of the Iron Sheik. And boy, do we have some great guests. How about this? WWE Hall of Famer Jake the Snake Roberts. Also, Brett Azar, who plays the Iron Sheik in Young Rock, will join us on the podcast today. And historian Keith Elliott Greenberg with some stories that I didn't even know about the Iron Sheik. All that right now on the Busted Open Podcast. Jake the Snake Roberts. Sir, how are you? And thank you for the time this morning. Man.
I'm doing absolutely fabulous, fixing to hop in my monster truck and drive it to Jacksonville and just enjoy my sunny day with my wife, and it can't get much better.
It's good to see that, and it brings up, you know, one of the reasons why we brought you on this morning, and that's the Iron Sheik, because he traveled that road, you know, drug and alcohol abuse, you know, losing his daughter and just hitting rock bottom and getting and trying to find life again and having that wife and that support system that kind of brought him back. And it was good to at least see at the end of his life that he kind of found some happiness again.
That's so good, man. I mean, Sheik was what he was, and definitely a character beyond all characters. You know, he was something else. I know I've been thinking about him quite a bit since his passing, and it reminded me of a story I've got for you with him. We were driving, this is back in 1975.
Whoa.
Yeah. And he was new to wrestling, and he was also new to the English language. He didn't understand some things, that some things you can say something and it'd be good, even though it sounds like it's bad. Like, I think I call him a bad son of a bitch. And he friggin' lost it. I was driving the car and he's like, "You motherfucker, I can't believe you called Sheiky baby bad son of a bitch. Pull the car over. I'm going to teach you some respect. I'm going to fuck you in the ass." You know, wow. And I'm like, "Oh my God," you know, and I'm like, "Shit, what's wrong?" And I said, "I called you a bad son of a bitch." And then I pulled the car over. He jumped out, man. He ripped his shirt off. "Come on." And I just put the car in drive and drove off.
get the hell out of there.
Yeah. So I went down the road about a mile, and he came walking up, and I looked at him, and he says, "Oh, Jake, my best friend, I can't believe you leave the Sheiky baby," you know? But, you know, he didn't understand that you could say one thing, but with the difference in languages, he calls somebody a bad son of a bitch in their language, that means you're a piece of shit.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, but in our language, it means you're a bad motherfucker. You know? That's one of my favorite stories of Sheik.
That's amazing. Amazing story. And thank you for sharing it. And I know you have a ton. I mean, because, you know, Jake, you are such an integral part of the territories because you wrestled in them all, you know, Georgia, Mid-South, world class. And then, you know, being a part of the WWF, I guess you can call the golden era of pro wrestling at that time. Without a doubt. Talk about that transition from being a part of the territories and then going into that big national push of the WWF at that time.
You would never understand it unless you lived it, because I still look back and wonder how the hell I ever did it. You know, you leave a territory. I left Mid-South to go there. And in Mid-South, I was driving everywhere 7 days a week.
Wow.
And all of a sudden now, I'm in the WWF, and I'm flying 7 days a week. Wrestling twice on Saturday, wrestling twice on Sunday in different cities. You know, we'd do LA at 2 o'clock, San Diego at 7 o'clock, you know, and then you do Omaha at 2 o'clock and then do Des Moines at 7 o'clock. And then the next morning you get up and take another flight. And Steamboat and I did 91 days straight like that.
Wow. Two shows a day?
On Saturdays and Sundays.
Oh my God.
Yeah, plus driving in between.
I can't even imagine how sore you guys were after one match, getting in the car, going to the other place, like in that, sometimes not even sleeping, because if you guys were partying all night, like let's say
we did not sleep. Sometimes for days.
Oh Lord. Wow.
Yeah, but we survived somehow, you know. And I know I'd call my wife, I'm like, baby, I can't take this anymore. My body hurts so bad, I can't take it. She says, well, you just got a check for 14 grand. Oh shit. 14 grand? God, in Mid-South, that'd take me 2 months.
Wow.
And I just made that in a week.
14 grand back in the day. That's a lot. Yeah. That's a lot of money.
Yeah, it was.
But do you think it was like worth the sacrifice in your body with the money that you got? Because I think that's the main question that a lot of people, you know, after they suffer a big injury, that's what they start questioning. Yeah. Is it worth my health? Like, with the money that I made?
Well, you had a choice. You could quit, you know, and mm-hmm. Vince was very hard line on that. Nobody got time off, you know, but, you know, again, you go from Mid-South where you're hoping to stay 6 months and maybe save $4,000 or $5,000 to going to New York and making 200 grand in 3 months, wow. You know? So, you know, you kind of look at it and you say, you know what? I'm not hurting that fucking bad. And plus, you got to remember, and you'll attest to this, sweetheart. It doesn't matter once the bell rings. No matter how bad you feel good again. You get out in the ring and you get that adrenaline rush. And Jesus, your body doesn't hurt. Your mind doesn't hurt. You feel like playing. And I know I can't tell you how many friggin' times I've been in the locker room going, oh my God, if I can just get through this, oh fuck, I'm gonna go get in that bed. Oh my God. Then I'd go out and wrestle, and the adrenaline would hit me, and I'd come back from the ring, woohoo, let's go, baby. Where are we going? Come on. And you go out and do it again.
Jake, thank you so much for the time.
Thank you guys.
Good luck
much.
This weekend.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Thunder.
This is former UFC champion Chris Weidman. Do you want to feel what it's like to get in the octagon with me? Right now, we are bringing the hardest hitting MMA talk on the planet to your podcast feeds with Won't Back Down, a SiriusXM podcast. Every Monday, I'm speaking my mind and taking you inside combat sports like no one else. Every tap, every snap, and whatever else is on my mind. Download Won't Back Down right now on SiriusXM, Stitcher, Pandora, or wherever you get your podcast. Won't Back Down.
Every day is a great day when you're not worrying about your appliances and home systems. And that's what you get with an American Home Shield warranty. Unexpected breakdowns like a leaky faucet or a faulty water heater won't break the bank with an American Home Shield warranty. Because covered repairs and replacements are taken care of. Choose a plan that works for you and your budget, and then it's simple. When a covered item in your home breaks, contact American Home Shield, and their trusted and qualified pros will fix it or replace it based on the coverage limits in your agreement. Right now, you can take 20% off. Go to ahs.com/bustedopen now to save 20%. That's ahs.com/bustedopen for 20% off any plan. American Home Shield. Don't worry. Be warranted. See ahs.com. NJ.com/contracts for coverage details, including limit amounts, fees, limitations, and exclusions. New Jersey residents, the product being offered is a service contract and is separate and distinct from any product or service warranty which may be provided by the home builder or manufacturer. Life doesn't happen bi-weekly, so why should payday? The money you earn could be in your hands today with EarnIn. EarnIn is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day or up to $750 per pay period. Just download the EarnIn app and verify your paycheck. Then access up to $100 a day as you work and leave an optional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. Download EarnIn today, spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the EarnIn app, type in Busted Open under podcast when you sign up. Busted Open under podcast. EarnIn is a financial technology company, not a bank. Subject to your available earnings, daily max, pay period max, and location. See EarnIn.com/TOS for details. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank and Trust, member FDIC. Get in on the playoff action and win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks as you and the world's best players take the game to a new level during basketball's postseason. Prize Picks is the best way to get action on sports in more than 30 states across the country. You can win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 correct picks. And it's really simple to play. You can make your picks and submit your entry in less than 60 seconds. You can turn $10 into $1,000 with basketball, hockey, and college basketball entries today on Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. Download the app today and use code BUSTED for a first deposit match up to $100. That's code BUSTED for a first deposit match up to $100. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. When you hear that Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan, you're probably thinking, what's the catch? Well, there isn't one. Mint Mobile is here to rescue you with premium wireless plans for just $15 a month. Say bye-bye to your overpriced wireless plans, jaw-dropping monthly bills, and unexpected overages. All plans come with unlimited talk and text, plus high-speed data delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. It's crystal clear, and it doesn't kill my monthly budget. To get this new customer offer and your new three-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/bustedopen. That's mintmobile.com/bustedopen. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/bustedopen. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3 months plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details. Our guest who joins us right now, Brett Azar. Brett, how are you this morning, man?
Fantastic.
You look very comfortable, Brett.
I'm in my lazy boy, which you can't see.
I know. I was just you look extremely comfortable and ready to be interviewed. That's how you look. Yeah. That's a perfect look.
The fake background is hiding the lazy boy.
I love it. And Brett, I do mean it. Uber talented. Obviously, a lot of people, the masses, have been able to see you lately on Young Rock as the Iron Sheik. And I know you probably have some stories about the Iron Sheik because I know you studied him to play his character on Young Rock. So what was that like?
Doing the studying part. When I initially booked the role and miraculously got in contact with the Sheik himself, we were Skyping, and I'll never forget that initial conversation we had.
Oh my God.
Where I was trying to explain to him what was going on, and I was like, so I'm gonna be on TV playing you in a show on NBC.
Yes, I do TV. How much you pay me for TV?
No, I'm the actor. I'm sure NBC will take care of you, but I need your help to be you, because even though it's COVID, we're going to go to Australia and we're going to film this TV show with The Rock.
I don't go to Australia. I stay here in Georgia. No, Sheik,
I'm going because we're going to go film this TV show.
Yes, I do TV. You pay me for TV. No, Sheik.
And so it took a little minute. But eventually his wife, Carol, and his daughter, Nicole, were with him. And they were like, okay, Dad, this is what's going on. And then finally he came around and I was like, so how do you say this? How do you say that? What's, you know, and he was really fun to just, he was so just quiet and loving. And it's opposite of what you think of when you think of Shiki. He was so introverted and like relaxed. It was cool to get that angle of him.
What was the most difficult part of you embracing the cheek and like now knowing him in a personal level for you to like portray on TV?
Well, as an actor, the hardest thing you can do is play somebody who knows is going to see you. Like mm-hmm. I wasn't worried about performing well in front of The Rock or performing well because I'm on a nationally networked television show. I was more worried that the Sheik is alive and he's going to see me playing him on TV, and I hope I do him justice. And around the third episode of the first season, I got a phone call from him and his family, and they were like, "We love you. You're doing it. You're doing it right." But it was kind of funny because when I first talked to his daughter Nicole, once she saw me on TV, she was like, "So is Dad keeping a secret from us?" And I was like, "No, I'm not related to you. No, there's nothing." So it was a funny. They're like, "You really do look like him." I was like, "I had no idea until it was shaved." And yeah, it was really surprising how casting saw that in me when I didn't even see that in me.
Did you have any experience with professional wrestling, either amateur or MMA or anything that when you were casted, they were like, or you're just because of the physique that you have?
It was all physique. Day one, once we got to Australia, we did our quarantine thing. And day one out of quarantine, Chavo Guerrero was waiting for us from the ring. And when I met Chavo, I didn't recognize him at first. And he introduced mm-hmm. himself. I was like, you're Chavo. And he goes, yeah. I was like, I fucking hate you. And he was like, thank you. And so I was like, yeah, when Jackie pinned you, I was so happy. I hated you with your stupid Pepe, whatever puppet you were carrying around. Like, I wanted to kick your ass when I was growing up, man. And he was cracking up. He goes, yeah, I did my job. Thank you.
You know, Brett, one thing I do want to mention, and I've seen some of your work, and it's absolutely fantastic, because obviously with the bodybuilding and the acting and everything you've done with Young Rock, but your sketches, and I know that's a passion of yours, and Thunder, I don't know if you've seen it, it's amazing. And
yes, I have. I'm actually looking, and I just follow you on Instagram, you know, that's how I am.
We've actually done a few events together, signing events.
Yeah, you look very familiar. Where was it, in LA or like?
It was in Jersey or New York or Connecticut.
Oh, yes.
But yeah, you were painted up. I think it was it might have been
big event last year, November.
Yeah, probably.
Yes,
it wouldn't be November.
Yeah, it was been a big event for sure. Oh okay. My God, yes. So, when you do your sketches, do you just do them like with pencil, or you actually because you use the computer? It's just
a black pen, not even pencil. Once it's down, there's no mistakes allowed.
Wow. You know, it's pretty impressive.
Yeah, it's my mental therapy on top of my physical therapy of gym time. But it's cool because like people will, you know, because I played the Terminator, I get a lot of Terminator requests, and a lot mm-hmm. of people will, because they're a fan, they'll want like half of their face, kind of like what you do with your makeup. Half of the face is normal and half of the face they want is the Terminator skull. So I'll do that customized for each person. I'll draw half their face and half the Terminator. And it's coming from the guy who played the Terminator. So it's kind of a cool, cool thing.
And Brett, you've kind of embraced, you know, being in this wrestling community now, being on Young Rock, playing the Iron Sheik, like doing the meet and greet with fans. I mean, how's that experience been like for you?
Well, I feel honored that playing the Sheik and the Sheik's real fans adopted me and became fans of mine because they said that I'm doing him justice. I show the respect that he deserves playing his character, playing the character of him on TV, to be adopted into the actual wrestling community is a huge deal to me that I feel so honored and humbled, as Shiki would love to hear, you know, that I get to sit down with, you know, like I sat next to Mark at a signing event, and I was like, what am I doing here at a wrestling event? I'm an actor. And they're like, no, bro, you're one of us now. So to be accepted into that community is really special. And I'm very grateful just for playing Cheek.
I was going to tell you, like, you're talking about playing the Terminator and playing the Cheek. And then I'm looking at one of your art pieces where it's like half Cheek, half Terminator. That's really cool that you can just like now have two different worlds that are very similar, which is the acting and wrestling, and they're all together. And you got to play it as an actor, and you got to play someone so well-known by the whole entire world, even people that do not follow professional wrestling, which is the Iron Sheik. That's pretty awesome. Actually, two big characters. I was just like watching Arnold's docuseries on Netflix yesterday about when he became a Terminator, and then you being a bodybuilder and being a Terminator. That's actually pretty, pretty cool.
Yeah, it's very humbling to be able to play such iconic people, characters in my career. Just it's cloud nine moments over and over again.
Well, Brett, I know I interviewed you just before the premiere of Young Rock. I had you and the rest of the cast, and we did, you know, that was like right during the lockdown when we did it on Zoom, and to see how this show has grown and how it's become one of the best sitcoms on TV, you know, having it on NBC, and hopefully we get another season. I know everything's kind of in doubt right now because of the writer's strike, but hopefully we get another season, because I really think this show has hit its stride, and it's my favorite show on TV, so I hope there's a bright future ahead.
That's awesome to hear. Thank you. I appreciate it. Hearing that from you guys, because I respect what you say. So when you say it's a good show, it's kind of awesome to hear. And as far as season four goes, yeah, like we have no idea what's going on, but the show stopped at season three, where The Rock just became The Rock.
Yep.
And just started his movies. Like, there's so much more to tell. So, you know, DJ's not going to let it just die there.
Oh, no, we know that.
There's so much more to go. And then I'm sure he's got plenty of other stories of when he was 10 years old, because that's the Shiki timeline. But
Brett, I'm sorry, David. Brett, going back to the Shiki, like, what is one thing you will take as an actor from playing this character and, you know, and transferring to a more personal level from Sheik's life?
And we just have about 30 seconds, Brett.
Okay, I've never had more fun playing a character, because with Sheik, he was so eccentric. As an actor, you can't fuck it up. You can't overact. If you mess up your words, Sheik was saying everything backwards anyway. It was the best character to play. So for me, that was the greatest part, because I could go in there, mumble a bunch of shit, and it was on cue.
Hi, everybody. Christopher Mad Dog Russo here. Familiar? You should be. Well, now you can catch Mad Dog's Daily Bite each day as a podcast, where you'll hear my thoughts and opinions on the biggest topics around the world of sports. NFL, baseball, golf, NBA, even the hockey. That you know you can count on. That's Mad Dog's Daily Bite. Drops daily anywhere you get your podcasts. And you can also hear me weekdays 3 to 6 Eastern on Mad Dog Unleashed, Sirius XM Channel 82, or anytime on the SXM app.
I want to thank everybody that's kind of reached out to us and has been a part of these last 24 hours, giving respect and tribute and celebrating the life and career of the Iron Sheik. And somebody that we had to get on, somebody I know that knew this man inside and out, and that is historian, author, and columnist, the great Keith Elliott Greenberg, joins us right now here on Busted Open. Keith, how are you, man?
Thank you. And thanks for waiting a few days, because after superstar Billy Graham's funeral last week, you know, I was really not prepared for the Iron Sheik passing, but I've kind of processed it by now.
And Keith, oh, go ahead.
Sorry, Thunder, I was just going to ask you that being, I just feel like every time we have a very unfortunate situation coming up, that's the time that I see you. Yeah, how difficult for you as a historian, and also because you have a lot of deep relationships with all of these wonderful people, how do you process your grief?
It's a hard thing. I mean, since the beginning of the year, you know, Lanny Poffo, who was my good friend, died, and then three people I co-authored books with have died.
Wow.
The Iron Sheik, superstar Billy Graham, and Tom Stephen from the Jeff Healey Band. So I haven't learned how to process this yet. You know, I've never had, you know, such a flurry of deaths back to back. It reminds me a bit of what was happening in the era when wrestlers were dying very quickly. Like there's that story where, you know, Rick Rude was on TV for the Pillman tribute, and then a week later he was gone. You know, I don't think it's something you really adjust to. I was just glad I had a couple of days so I wasn't rambling or, you know, acting bitter about the circumstances.
No, and Keith, it's always difficult. Listen, you know, whenever you lose somebody that you have a personal relationship, or even just as fans, somebody that we've watched all our lives. Yeah. I mean, the Iron Sheik, I've been watching pro wrestling for over 40 years. The Iron Sheik was always there. And then when you lose somebody, it hits you hard. The one thing that I have to say is 81 years old. It's never easy.
Actually,
to lose
he was
somebody.
80. I had to correct the reporter from the obituary writer from the Washington Post, got on the phone with myself and the Megan twins, who you know very well, the Iron Sheiks. He called them nephews. They were dear family friends who acted as his managers. The Iron Sheik specified to me that his official birthday that's on his passport is incorrect. His family followed the Persian calendar, and so he had not turned 81 yet. He was still 80.
Wow. I mean, you know, Keith, I wasn't aware of that.
How would you?
I know. but Keith, it's, you know, and the 14, I keep saying this, but, you know, the 14 years that this show has been on the air, we've had so many, you know, tribute shows for wrestlers that have passed. Unfortunately, a lot of those wrestlers have been younger and, you know, yeah. And you know, I get the lifestyle of the wrestler, especially in the 70s and 80s, is far different than what it is like right now. And with the road that the Iron Sheik was on, I'm sure there were times, many times over the last 30 years that you thought, oh my gosh, is this man going to make it because of everything that he had to
really.
Go through?
I actually thought he was such a, look, because I wrote a book with him that was never published, but that's a story for another day. I knew what a strong person he was, and I knew what a strong, supportive family he had, and I actually believed that he would make it. I never thought that I was going to, like, wake up and get that phone call about him. And, you know, I actually scribbled a few things down this morning about what a physical marvel he truly was. And I also resolved, I told Paul, your producer, I don't want to talk about crazy drug stories and things of that nature. You know, people can go to the A&E documentary, and I talk about that plenty over there. But, you know, what he started out, as people know, he was in the Pan American Games. He was a two-time U.S. Greco-Roman team coach. And so he was unlike even his peers who were great athletes. And he told me a story about bringing Lou Thesz and Danny Hodge, two of the greatest, shooters who, and in terms of being in physical shape, two of the best ever, to a high school football field when he was in the Georgia territory. And he said, we're going to work out the old school Persian way. And he started putting them through the types of calisthenics he did back in the old country. And he was he blew both of them up, which he expected because, you know, they weren't used to doing those types of calisthenics. And Lou Thesz, who did not suffer people who should not have been in the business well, was so impressed that he gave the Iron Sheik, who was very young at the time, money for a car. So, you know, that's the kind of guy he was. Stu Hart asked him to coach his children. Now, he had many people coaching his children. But, you know, Brett and Owen, there were periods. I think Owen was very little then. It might have just been Brett and some of his brothers. But, you know, Stu Hart knew the Iron Sheik's amateur background, and he wanted this to be one of the people who made the who contributed to Bret Hart becoming the excellence of execution. You know, when he was training with Vern Gagne, saw the Sheik being a little bit defiant with Billy Robinson, who was one of the coaches. And at one point, he brought the Sheik into a ring alone. And, you know, they didn't smarten people up to the business back then. And he drop kicked the Sheik across the chest. And the Sheik just, you know, he was a tough man. That's why I didn't expect him to die. He just came back and was ready to wrestle him. And that's when Vern had to finally break down and, you know, tell him the big secret. And the way he invited him in was he said, Khosrow, be one of us. And, you know, it almost makes me sad to think that those days are over, that it was such an exclusive society that you would have to have one of the greats. Like now, maybe you'd have a Shawn Michaels who would test you and say, okay, you've passed the test, be one of us. And the other person I want to mention is Carl Gotch, who was known as the God of Wrestling. And, the Iron Sheik told me he would work out with no weights, you know, just neck bridges, Hindu squats, very intensive exercise. And after shooting with Carl Gotch one time, Carl Gotch was so impressed that he brought the Iron Sheik to his home to dinner and then booked him on his first tour of Japan. And even Dean Malenko, when I spoke to him when I was working on the Iron Sheik book, told me that when the Iron Sheik would work out with Professor Boris Malenko, he showed them the Iranian exercise clubs, which were part of his gimmick. And both Dean and Joe Malenko then took bowling pins and you know, filled them up with lead. And they started doing those exercises themselves. So there's influence there, you know, of, you know, what he brought to wrestling. And that's why I was always confident between that and the quality of his family that he was going to make it through.
And, you know, you said a lot there, Keith. And one of the things that you mentioned was about the mystique of pro wrestling and that, like, that private club of pro wrestling that, listen, Busted Open wouldn't have been able to exist, you know, 40, 50 years ago. So, you know, I almost feel like I'm being hypocritical when I say
me
this.
Too. Me too.
You know, but I do miss that. I do feel that, like, this, and I still feel this way, Keith, that there's a line that I just should not cross because, you know, pro wrestling is still an elite club and it's in its own bubble and I'm on the outside and they're on the inside.
Yeah, me
and I
too.
feel like there's a lot of, you know, quote unquote journalists and fans that feel like they need to be on the inside. I kind of like being on the outside as much.
I know, and it's interesting. Thunder Rosa said this earlier because I was listening to the show earlier.
Thank you, Keith, for listening.
And she said, you know, it's not a dirt sheet show. And when she says dirt sheet, she's not talking about perhaps Dave Meltzer so much as she's talking about these people who are just putting clickbait out there.
Yeah.
And look, there's a role that plays in pro wrestling now. There's a reason why these people get invited to all the press junkets. But, you know, I think it's important to tell authentic wrestling stories. And in my case, as a writer, craft those stories, write those stories well. Take pride in the actual art of the writing so that history is conveyed properly and with the respect it deserves.
And, go ahead, Thunder, please.
One of the important things that you mentioned, and you know, as you were speaking, is telling the story of the Sheik now that he's passed away, because I feel like because people focus so much on the negatives, right? And because it's so sensationalist. Thank you. My Espanol sometimes comes in.
Yo puedo comprenderlo.
It is difficult for people to understand what the real person is, right? And what you're mentioning, and I think struck the most more than, you know, the training in his past is the fact that he had a very strong family. And I was reading that he stayed with his wife for 47 years. Mm-hmm. And knowing this business has destroyed families and had destroyed marriages.
And this business almost did destroy his family, but they loved each other. And I was with him during this period when his wife had drawn the line and said, you know, I can't be with you if you're going to still behave like this. And his daughters, particularly his daughter Tanya, was very tough with him. And he was very sad to be without his wife. And he was really missing her. And I think he understood, you know, that was a loss he could not endure. And, you know, by this point, he had lost one of his daughters. And so that love then, you know, transformed his life. And he came back to be with his wife. And that's the person he truly was. And that was the person he was meant to be.
And Keith, that story about even with Luthez, I never knew that story. Like, to me, those are
stories he told me. If the book had come out, then everyone would know that story.
And I guess it's just difficult to really kind of put the Iron Sheik, you know, in a box about, because he's so complex and he has so many different levels to his personality, and he accomplished so much in his life. It's really hard. I mean, as an author, it must have been really difficult to put that into written form.
Well, interestingly, he was one of the easiest guys I co-authored a book with. You know, he had time because he wasn't wrestling anymore. And he trusted me. And so he was separated from his wife when we worked on the book the first time. There were two versions of the book that were written. There was one book that was written. Well, I wrote it in 2009. I remember we were watching in 2008. He and I were watching the Democratic convention on TV. So that's when we were working on the book. And then he still had issues to resolve when that book was completed. And so it was decided by WWE that it wasn't necessarily good for the brand to put that book out. And I think they were concerned about, having him go on a book tour and not being as responsible as he should have been. And then he resolved his drug issues. And so I rewrote the book. And that book, Steve Pantaleo, who works at WWE, with whom I've co-written two versions of the WWE encyclopedia, he and I were like in, you know, the WWE's offices, like looking through photos of the Iron Sheik, selecting photos for the book. And then I was told the directive had come from up top that there were just too many outrageous tales in that book. And, you know, it would be impossible to sanitize. And how does it really be like the depiction of pro wrestling through the Iron Sheik's life may have, you know, in some ways it was accurate. I mean, it was a very reckless lifestyle during a period of time. And he embodied that more than anybody because he had been so straight-laced when he was back in Iran. He wasn't with women. He never drank beer. And then he goes into this world where, you know, Jimmy Superfly Snuka offers him a joint the first time. And he's like, this is what I'm missing. I mean, you can understand that. It's like some kid who grows up homeschooled in a religious family, and then they go to a secular college. They're going to go out of their minds. And, you know, so then the book was killed a second time. And, you know, people say you're bitter. I mean, I'm disappointed. I'm a little bit heartbroken that the Iron Sheik didn't get, you know, the satisfaction of having that book in print. But, you know, I was paid twice and so was he.
Is there a possibility, just a future possibility, maybe in like 10, 20 years, that some like, what do they call it? That you will write something about it, or you are not allowed to?
I mean, I've spoken about it on, you know, on in the two documentaries I'm in. I've written about it in Playboy magazine when I did a profile of him. But I don't own the rights to the book.
Okay.
And I'm hoping, and I've said this before, that even if it's not now, when you say 10 or 20 years, maybe one of Triple H's daughters, when she's in charge of WWE, will decide it's time now.
It's time for that to come out. You never know. And just so you know, Keith, I always read Playboy for your articles. I don't look at the pictures.
I just
read the art. I just read the articles. Keith, something that we talked a lot about the last 24 hours is January 23rd, 1984, when Hogan beat the Iron Sheik. That moment, I put it up against Super Bowls, World Series games, like the natural reaction of that crowd when Hogan beat the Iron Sheik. I don't think you could ever relive that moment again, where you have 20,000 fans all rooting for one person, and that was Hogan, and all 20 fans hating one man being the Iron Sheik. It's one of the most natural reactions I've ever seen. And do you agree that that's a moment in time that you probably could never duplicate?
You couldn't duplicate it. And I was there for both the night Bob Backlund lost, and then I was there for the night that Hulk Hogan won. And at the time, I was 24. I was writing a periodic wrestling column for the Staten Island Advance. I wasn't with WWE yet. And yet, you see, it was an era when a lot of fans still believed, and that the Garden was not yet peopled with the beautiful folks. It was peopled with people who needed the release that pro wrestling gave them. So most of them believed that the Iron Sheik represented the Ayatollah, and the Ayatollah had taken Americans hostage and humiliated us, and, you know, probably had a big influence on Jimmy Carter losing the 1980 election. And so Hulk Hogan was waving the flag, and people bought into that. It was also, you know, the middle of the Ronald Reagan era.
Yeah.
And, you know, people weren't smart to the business yet, by and large. Even people who would roll their eyes weren't entirely sure. And so that emotion, it was like the emotion I felt when I used to see Bruno wrestle. There was something authentic mixed in there. And it was, people truly wanted to invest in Hulk Hogan and what he represented. And it was like a victory for America. Now it sounds so quaint and hokey, but that was what it felt like.
It almost felt like that was the end of one era of pro wrestling and the beginning of another era, because you just said something and it kind of hit me when you were saying it, the crowd. Like, that crowd was still the blue collar type crowd. It was probably more adult than kids in the crowd at that time. And really, Hogan brought in the cartoonish era of pro wrestling.
Right, and let's not demean it. Let's not demean it. Hulk Hogan brought an awful lot of people
100%
to the show. But you know, there's a symbolic moment that's always struck me. when I watch the footage of the Iron Sheik against Hulk Hogan, Vince McMahon Sr. opens up the curtain for Hulk Hogan before he comes out. And, you know, within less than a year, Vince McMahon Sr. was dead. And it was almost like the ghost of the past opening the curtain. Wow. And once that person closes, that era evaporates.
Wow.
That's strong. And it's, you know what? And I think that's the best way to describe it, Keith. And I think the pro wrestling world saw it coming, Keith. And one of the things that were talked about, and I don't know if you were able to hear the show yesterday, but, you know, we had Jerry Briscoe on, and we had Sergeant Slaughter on, and we had Greg Gagne on. And one of the things they were talking about is the supposed bounty that Vern, you know, offered to Iron Sheik, $100,000 if he took out Hogan so Hogan couldn't win that championship. Iron Sheik could retain and bring that championship back to the AWA. You know, Jerry Briscoe swore on it. Sergeant Slaughter swore on it. Greg Gagne didn't believe it. He didn't say that it wasn't true. He just couldn't picture his father doing something like that. Do you think there's any truth to that bounty at all?
I mean, I think it is true. Yeah. I've spoken about it so much with the Iron Sheik. I don't think he would weave an elaborate lie like that. And he, as you know, because Greg Gagne discussed it, the Iron Sheik loved the Gagne family. And, you know, Mary Gagne was the one who gave him the name the Iron Sheik. And that was when they were both at the Montreal Olympics in 1976. And he wasn't satisfied just being, you know, Ali Vaziri or Khosrau Vaziri. And, you know, she was the one who came up with the concept of the Iron Sheik. And he said, you know, there's already a Sheik in Detroit. And she said, he doesn't pay your bills. He goes, but there's no Sheiks in Iran. There's, you know, Sheiks in Lebanon. There's Sheiks in the Gulf states. There's Sheiks in Saudi. Like, the fans won't know. And if I look this up, the first time he wrestles as the Iron Sheik, after being Ali Vaziri, Khosrau Vaziri, Muhammad Farouk, is in 76. He then, in September 76, so the Olympics are in the summer of 76, and by September, he is the Iron Sheik. Now, he'd have other personas on and off for the next few years. So that's a big influence on his life. And Vern Gagne coached him to be a pro wrestler. So when he told me how much Vern meant to him, that it caused him to take that offer seriously, he was not lying. And I discussed that with Sergeant Slaughter, because the Iron Sheik told me that he went to Sergeant Slaughter to ask, what should I do? Because when the Iron Sheik was starting out in Minnesota and wrestling, Sergeant Slaughter's father owned a roofing company and the Iron Sheik worked for him. So he was, you know, him and Sergeant Slaughter were very dear friends, as you know, and great opponents in the ring. And Slaughter said that would be a really dumb thing to do, because you're talking about Vince versus Vern Gagne. That era is over. This era is the future, and invest with the McMahons. And the Iron Sheik also had a great deal of affection for the McMahons, as they had for him. And, you know, and so would he have broken Hulk Hogan's leg? Very possible. I mean, you look at pro wrestling history. What was it, 1925? Stanislaw Zbyszko. I think it was Gus. Was it Gus Sonnenberg? No, it was Wayne Munn. He, you know, went into business for himself and took the title. I mean, this was not without precedent in pro wrestling.
Again, the mystique, the stories, the myths. And after hearing the stories from you, Keith, and then again from Sergeant Slaughter, like, imagine if he did. Imagine if he did break Hogan's leg. Could Vince take the WWF National at that time? Because their golden child, Hulk Hogan, would be out with an injury. Who could they use?
I mean, he would have pinned the he would have pinned Hogan in the ring or left him in the ring. I mean, it's almost like a fantasy. Like, what if? It's like when people say, what if the South had won the Civil War? And then you think about, well, then the South might have been allies with Germany in World War One. And if they were allies with Germany in World War One, maybe Germany would have won World War One, and then there wouldn't have been a Hitler. So you don't know.
It's, you know, and then with no Hogan, do we have the first WrestleMania? Probably not. You know, would they, you know, would we be able to have that national?
Would Vince McMahon be so determined that he'd find a way to bury Hulk Hogan on TV and come in with like Dusty Rhodes or Ric Flair the next week?
Imagine that. That sounds like the title of a show, Thunder. Imagine that.
There can be so many. So many shows, or so many episodes of things that could have happened.
Yeah,
you know, just like based on this.
Yeah. Right. Think about it. You know, Ric Flair was pretty charismatic back then. Maybe he would have been the Hulk Hogan.
Busted Open is part of the SiriusXM Sports Podcast Network. If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more, please give a 5-star rating and leave a review. Subscribe today wherever you stream your podcast. Catch the full 3 hours of Busted Open Monday through Saturday at 9 a.m. Eastern on SiriusXM Financial, channel 156. Go to SiriusXM.com/BustedOpenTrial to start your free trial today.
Hey there. I host a show called Therapy Gecko, where I dress up as a lizard and talk to anonymous strangers from the internet about their lives. They tell me their relationship problems.
I found out that I was related to the guy that I was dating.
Their hobbies.
I collect my roommate's toenails and fingernails.
Their secrets.
When we did not have toilet paper, I would use the shower curtain.
And also sometimes kind of serious stuff.
I have anxiety when I talk to people.
I'm also sometimes joined by celebrity guests like Doja Cat, Lil Yachty, Bobby Lee, and Eric Andre. Some of the more interesting calls we've gotten recently include a guy who argued with a demon living on his wall, a caller drunk at his job at a middle school, and a caller wondering whether or not he should transform into a dog. So if you're sick of your own life and you want to get lost in the life of a stranger, search for Therapy Gecko wherever you get your podcasts.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.